Usually when we talk about digital security, there's this comforting, almost therapeutic routine we're all used to.
Yeah, the classic password reset drill.
Exactly. You get that dreaded alert that your data might have been in a breach. Your heart drops for a second, then you go in, you click forgot password, you wait for the email, and you type in a new, slightly more complicated string of letters and numbers, and boom, reset. You're safe again.
Right. I mean, it's an annoyance, maybe a major headache if you use that password literally everywhere, but it's a completely fixable problem. You get a clean slate and you just move on with your life.
But today, we are diving into a reality that completely shatters that comforting routine. Because a compromised password can easily be reset. But you cannot readily replace your face.
No, you definitely cannot.
You can't just generate a new voice. And you certainly can't get new fingerprints. So the mission of this deep dive is to explore what companies are actually collecting when they ask for your biometric data. We're going to look at the hidden risk of this technology and, critically, how we can protect ourselves in a post-password world.
It really is a critical shift in how we prove who we are.
Yes.
And we need to ground this conversation right away, because when people hear the word biometrics, they still picture, you know, high security vaults, laser grids, secret government facilities.
Well, yeah, the whole sci-fi movie setup.
Exactly. But that's not the reality of the sources we're looking at today. Biometrics have moved out of those specialist environments and directly into our everyday commercial lives.
Right.
We are talking about the facial comparison you do when opening your everyday banking app. We are talking about the fingerprint scans employers use for basic attendance and access control. We're even talking about contact centers analyzing your voice when you call customer service to dispute a charge.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I think most of us have this fundamental misunderstanding of what is actually happening when a company asks for our face.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we think, oh, I'm just taking a selfie, I'm verifying my identity, and they're just holding a little JPEG picture of me on file. But moving from that familiar concept to the highly technical reality of what happens on a corporate server is wild. Treating a biometric template like a simple photograph is like thinking a complex chemical formula is just a picture of a pill. It's far more revealing and potentially dangerous.
That is a much more accurate way to look at it, because it's not a photograph at all, at least not in the way we think of it.
Okay, so what is it actually doing then?
Well, when you provide a facial scan to a modern security system, the software is extracting incredibly precise, measurable physical features. It maps the geometry of your face, the exact distance in millimeters between your pupils, the specific curvature of your jawline, the depth of your eye sockets. Yeah, and then it converts all of that spatial data into a complex mathematical representation. In the industry, this is known as a template.
And that it uses that template to produce what the sources call a similarity score when it compares it to another image.
Exactly. It's just comparing the math. But that template is not just a random string of ones and zeros. It remains highly sensitive personal information.
Because it's still tied to you.
Right. As long as it relates to an identifiable individual, it preserves enough structure to create a massive privacy risk if it gets out. And the collection doesn't stop at just the template. The system is silently sweeping up a massive package of metadata alongside it.
Right, the metadata, that part is crazy. Because they aren't just saving the math of your face. They are retaining the exact timestamps of your login, the specific device hardware you use, your IP address, your precise geolocation at the moment of the scan, confidence scores from the software, records of your failed attempts, and the liveness results.
Which brings us to a really insidious part of this collection process, which is behavioral biometrics.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
So these are completely invisible to the user. When you are interacting with a digital platform, they aren't just looking at your physical face or your fingerprint anymore. They are looking at how you behave while you use the device.
This was the part of the research that really stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah.
Because they are tracking keystroke cadence, literally how many milliseconds pass between you hitting the A key and the T key.
Exactly.
They track your mouse movement patterns. They can track your gait, like the way you physically walk, using the gyroscope if a phone is in your pocket. They measure touchscreen pressure and even the exact physical angle at which you prefer to hold your device.
Yeah, it's incredibly granular. They use these behavioral signals to distinguish legitimate users from bots, or to detect if someone is remotely manipulating your device. And, you know, to be fair to the industry, it is incredibly effective for security.
Because it's so hard to fake.
Right. A hacker might steal your password, but they can't mimic the exact pressure and angle you use when holding your phone. But while it stops fraud, it creates a monumental transparency challenge. Most people have absolutely no idea that their ordinary, everyday swiping and typing is being converted into a permanent identity profile.
But the fact that they are silently building these massive behavior profiles opens up a much darker question. Like, what happens to that profile next year? The sources talk extensively about this concept of function creep.
Yes, function creep is a massive vulnerability in corporate governance right now.
You basically hand over your physical or behavioral data for one very narrow purpose, and suddenly its use morphs into something you never agreed to.
Right, just think about the life cycle of that data. A facial image that you provided simply to verify a new bank account transaction might later become incredibly attractive to that same company for training their internal AI models or for watchlist screening against internal fraud databases.
Or look at the workplace. You swipe a fingerprint just to unlock the door and get into the building. Suddenly, management realizes they have all this access data, and it morphs into a productivity monitoring tool. They start tracking exactly how many minutes you spent in the break room, or if you were 3 minutes late back from lunch.
Yeah, that happens a lot more than people realize.
Or those voice recordings. You know, the ones where they say, this call is being recorded for quality assurance purposes when you call a service desk. The sources show those are actively being converted into permanent voice prints to identify you on future calls.
This raises an important question, though, which is what happens to the trust between a company and an individual when that shift occurs? The customer who consented to verify a bank transfer did not expect indefinite retention of their biometric data.
Definitely not.
They didn't expect it to be shared across a massive corporate group or used to make hidden inferences about their behavior.
And we are seeing regulatory bodies finally waking up to this reality. The UK Information Commissioner's Office, the ICO, has been very vocal here.
Yes, they have.
They've stated clearly that mere convenience does not justify intrusive processing. They actually stepped in and stopped organizations from using facial recognition and fingerprint scanning just for basic employee attendance. Their stance is basically, if a simple key card works, you don't need a map of someone's retinas.
And we are seeing similar movement in the U.S. too. The Federal Trade Commission issued stark warnings to businesses that biometric technologies carry serious privacy and security risks.
Right. They brought up that pharmacy chain, didn't they?
They explicitly cited a case involving a major pharmacy chain. Yeah. This company had deployed a biometric crime prevention system using facial recognition in their stores. But because of weak testing, poor oversight, and inadequate responses when the system made mistakes, it actively caused consumer harm.
Unbelievable.
Shoppers were being incorrectly flagged as shoplifters based on flawed biometric matches.
Which brings me to a huge point of friction I have with all the corporate defenses in these sources. The companies always say, well, the user consented. They checked the terms and conditions box.
Right, the classic defense.
But if I have to click agree to facial verification just to access my essential banking services, or if I have to scan my fingerprint to literally clock into my job and get my paycheck, is that really a choice? That feels a lot closer to extortion than actual consent.
I hear your frustration, but consider the alternative from the bank's perspective. They are facing unprecedented levels of identity theft, and they argue they are mandating these checks to protect your life savings.
I mean, sure, but the power dynamic is still completely skewed.
But you are right that it creates a profound imbalance of power. Meaningful consent is incredibly difficult in those scenarios. For a biometric program to be defensible, it requires strict purpose limitation.
Which means what, practically?
It requires offering a genuine, workable alternative for the user if they choose not to consent, maybe falling back to visiting a physical branch with an ID. And crucially, if a company wants to use that stored data for a new purpose, they can't just rely on the old terms of service. They have to ask you again.
So if we take a step back and look at the landscape, we have these massive corporations amassing incredibly sensitive, unchangeable biological data. They're holding on to it, sometimes repurposing it, and keeping it on servers indefinitely. By doing that, they've essentially created the ultimate honeypot for criminals.
They absolutely have. Because this data, unlike a password, is persistent.
Yeah.
Stolen credit cards have an expiration date. You know, you call the bank, they cancel it, they mail you a new plastic card. But a stolen biometric template or a behavioral profile can be leveraged over and over again.
And the ways criminals are attacking these systems are getting deeply sophisticated. The sources detail something called presentation attacks. This isn't just someone holding up a printed photo anymore.
No, it's way past that.
They're using physical masks, synthetic cloned voices, or even artificial fingerprints cast from glue to trick the physical sensors.
And they don't even need to attack the primary security system directly. If a criminal steals a database of facial images, they can use those to create deepfakes for social engineering. Stolen voice data is heavily used for authorized push payment fraud.
Oh, where they clone the voice of your boss or a family member to trick you into wiring money?
Exactly. It's incredibly convincing.
But the remote onboarding exposure, how they hack the system when you are opening a new account from home, that is what really got me. You know the drill? You're sitting on your couch, you open the app, and the bank asks you to hold your phone up, turn your head left, turn your head right, blink a few times.
Right. That mechanism is called liveness detection. The system is trying to ensure there is a live, breathing, three-dimensional human in front of the camera and not just a hacker holding up an iPad with a video of you.
Right. But the criminals have figured out how to bypass the physical camera entirely. They use emulators, virtual cameras, and something called screen injection tools.
Yeah.
So how does that actually work?
So it happens at the operating system level. The malware essentially intercepts the camera's feed before it ever reaches the banking app.
Wait, really? It just skips the camera?
Pretty much. It injects a pre-recorded AI-generated deepfake loop directly into the data stream. So the bank software thinks it's looking through your real phone camera lens, and it receives this perfectly clean, high-definition video of a person passing the liveness check. But that video never came from a physical camera at all.
It's a complete short circuit of the sensor. And the attacks get even more bizarre. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, is currently evaluating a massive threat called face morphing.
Face morphing is fascinating and terrifying. It involves taking the digital images of two different people and algorithmically blending them together pixel by pixel.
So, wait, how does that translate into a real-world hack? Like, what's the point of doing that?
Let's say a criminal wants to travel on your passport. They take a photo of you and a photo of themselves and use software to morph them together. The resulting image looks just enough like you and just enough like the criminal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if they manage to get that morphed photo onto a single fake identity document, an automated border gate might actually match that one photo to either person under certain conditions.
Uh-huh.
It fundamentally breaks the one-to-one mathematical relationship that biometrics entirely rely on.
And here is the kicker. If these high-tech injection attacks or morphing techniques fail, the criminals don't just give up. They go for the low-hanging fruit. They attack the fallback route.
Yes, the weakest link.
They intentionally fail the biometric check 5 times in a row, so the system says, oh no, you must be having camera trouble, let's try something else. Then it routes them to a call center where they just have to guess your mother's maiden name. Or it sends a one-time code to an email address the hacker has already compromised.
It happens all the time.
It's like installing a state-of-the-art 10-ton titanium vault door on your house, but leaving a flimsy screen door in the back for when you forget your keys.
Yeah.
The hackers aren't trying to drill through the titanium. They were just walking around to the back.
A strong biometric front door provides almost zero protection if the fallback route is incredibly weak. This is why the most resilient institutions don't just buy a shiny new algorithm. They assess the complete identity journey.
Right.
A biometric match should only ever contribute evidence to an identity claim. It should never create this false, unquestioned assumption that the person is conclusively who they say they are just because a camera matched some pixels.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because everything we've talked about so far assumes the technology works perfectly and it's just the hackers breaking it.
Yeah.
But the technology itself has inherent flaws. Biometric recognition is entirely probabilistic. It is never as simple yes or no.
Right. It deals entirely in probabilities and thresholds. Think of the algorithm like a bouncer at an exclusive club. If the bouncer is given strict orders to not let anyone suspicious and high threshold, he's going to accidentally turn away actual VIPs who just forgot their ID.
So that's the system rejecting the actual account owner.
Exactly. In biometrics, this is a false non-match. The genuine person is rejected. You're locked out of your own account. Your payment is delayed. Or you can't buy groceries because the AI didn't recognize you in low light.
And the flip side is the false match. If the bouncer is too relaxed and a low threshold, he lets anyone in.
Yeah.
The system treats two different people as the same person.
Yes.
This grants access to an imposter. Or worse, like in the pharmacy example, leads an organization to confidently accuse an innocent customer of a crime they didn't commit.
And we have to talk about why those errors happen, because it points to systemic issues in how these models are trained. Extensive NIST testing has proven that the performance of these algorithms varies materially.
Based on what?
Well, it varies based on basic environmental factors like image quality, lighting, and camera angle. But more troublingly, it varies based on aging and across different demographic groups. If certain demographics were underrepresented in the massive data sets used to initially train the AI model, the mathematical system will simply perform worse for those groups in the real world.
Which really makes me question all the corporate PR. If performance varies so wildly based on demographics, or even just a shadow on your face from bad lighting, how can we ever trust a vendor's headline accuracy rate when they try to sell these systems? You see these companies claiming 99.9% accurate on their websites. But that's in a perfectly lit laboratory, right?
Yeah, that headline accuracy rate is essentially meaningless without real-world context. Institutions must test the specific software under conditions that resemble their actual customer population and their messy, unpredictable operating environment. High-impact decisions like denying someone access to their life savings or accusing them of theft can never rely solely on an automated biometric output.
And for the fraud departments at these banks, this poor accuracy creates a total operational nightmare.
It is a massive double risk for them. If they set the security threshold too weak to avoid inconveniencing customers, they allow impersonators and fraudsters right through the front door.
What if they crank it up?
Right. If they crank the threshold up too strictly to stop the fraudsters, they end up blocking thousands of legitimate customers. That generates a mountain of unnecessary fraud alerts, which their human teams now have to manually investigate, overwhelming their resources.
And adding fuel to this entire fire is the supply chain risk. Because most of these regional banks, employers, or retail stores aren't building highly sophisticated facial recognition AI in-house.
Not at all.
They're purchasing cloud matching services and identity verification platforms from third-party vendors.
Which means your highly sensitive biometric data is passing through multiple different processors, servers, and APIs before a simple yes or no decision ever returns to the institution you thought you were dealing with.
It's just bouncing all over the internet.
Pretty much. Organizations have to know exactly where these digital samples are stored. Are they being secretly used to train the vendor's future models? Who has access to the database? Does the data cross international borders into jurisdictions with weaker privacy law?
Because outsourcing the technology does not outsource the accountability. If a third-party vendor gets breached, it's still the bank's customers whose faces are exposed. So knowing all these intense risks, the function creep, the deepfakes, the screen injections, the probabilistic errors, the third-party leaks, how does an organization actually build a biometric system that doesn't put everyone at risk?
The sources lay out a comprehensive blueprint for defense. It relies on a heavily layered control stack, and the foundational layer is proving necessity. The organization must document exactly what specific risk the biometric system is addressing and prove that a less intrusive method like a secure hardware key wouldn't work.
But the real game changer seems to be data minimization, and specifically this idea of verifying on device. Can you explain how that actually works compared to the old way?
Absolutely. The old way and the dangerous way is your phone takes a picture of your face, sends that raw image to the bank's cloud server, and the server compares it to an image they hold on file. The gold standard right now is moving the matching process entirely to your physical device. Think of how Apple Face ID or Android biometrics work. The template is stored securely on a dedicated chip inside your phone. When you log into the banking app, your phone compares your face to the template stored on the phone. If it matches, the phone just sends a cryptographic thumbs up to the bank's server.
So the bank never actually gets your face. They just get a highly encrypted, mathematically secure message from your trusted device saying, yep, it's them, let them in.
Exactly. The organization receives a trusted cryptographic result, drastically reducing their liability. If they must store templates centrally, they must be heavily encrypted, strictly segregated from other identifying data like names and addresses, and designed to be mathematically revocable.
And they have to test it, right?
Yes. Alongside that, they have to run independent testing across all demographics and attack types to ensure the system isn't biased or easily fooled.
And that leads into what the sources call layered identity assurance. Combining the biometrics with other contextual clues, like device intelligence or location data, it makes me think of the Swiss cheese model of security.
That's a good way to look at it.
Right. Every security measure, every single slice of cheese has holes in it. Your password can be guessed. Your biometric can be deepfaked. But if you layer enough different slices together, device intelligence, cryptography, biometrics, behavioral context, the holes don't line up. And the bad actors can't get a clear path all the way through.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is exactly how the best security leaders view this technology today. They do not see biometrics as infallible, perfect security, nor do they see it as completely unacceptable, dystopian surveillance.
It's somewhere in the middle.
Right. They view it as one heavily governed, highly specific component of a much larger identity strategy. No single check should be the undisputed source of truth.
And you still need a human in the loop, right? Customers must have a way to challenge a failed match if the system just decides it doesn't like their face that day. And finally, strict retention protocols. When you close your account or the purpose expires, that data must be destroyed, not just hidden away on a server.
We also have to look at incident response, because reacting to a biometric breach is fundamentally different than managing a password leak.
Right, because as we established earlier, you can't just tell everyone to go in and change their faces.
Exactly. When a breach happens, organizations have to rapidly establish exactly what format was exposed. Was it raw JPEG images, voice recordings, mathematical templates, or just the liveness metadata?
And if it's the templates?
If mathematical templates are compromised, they might need to be revoked, and customers forced to re-enroll with a new algorithm. Meanwhile, fraud teams have to instantly start monitoring for secondary misuse, because compromised facial or voice data won't just be used to log back into that same bank. It will almost certainly appear in deepfake social engineering attacks against the victim's family or employer down the line.
Which means the company has to provide incredibly specific, tailored guidance to the affected customers, not just a generic, "we take your privacy seriously" email. They need to say, here is exactly what biological data was exposed, here is how a hacker could use it against you in the real world, and here are the specific defenses we are putting in place.
So what does this all mean for the organizations aggressively adopting this tech? It means biometrics can absolutely strengthen remote authentication. They are excellent at preventing basic account takeovers. But deployed without clear purpose, without rigorous testing, or without strict lifecycle governance, they stop being a security tool and become a permanent, durable identity risk.
And that brings us to the final takeaway for you, listening right now. Next time your banking app asks you to slowly turn your head to the left, remember that you aren't just proving you're human. We've gone from the seemingly simple act of taking a selfie to the complex, heavily targeted mathematical templates sitting on corporate servers. We've seen how criminals bypass the cameras with screen injections, how algorithms carry hidden flaws, and how the convenience of a fingerprint scan can slowly erode our right to meaningful consent. Biometric data absolutely makes your identity harder for a criminal to steal today. But poor corporate governance makes the devastating consequences of that theft much, much harder to escape tomorrow. You have to start paying very close attention to what physical and behavioral data you're trading away for the sake of a few seconds of convenience.
And as we close this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder. We've talked today about how a leaked template can theoretically be revoked or updated by a well-designed cryptographic system in the present day.
Right.
But think about the sheer persistence of our biology. As quantum computing and future decryption technologies evolve at breakneck speed over the next few decades, will the raw biometric data we so casually surrender to a vendor today become the skeleton key to completely unlock our digital lives 30 years from now? Your face doesn't expire, but the security currently protecting it eventually will.